when hosting the Olympics was a good thing?
Yeah.
Is it still? It seems like there's so many complaints about every single Olympics that the negative coverage beats the positive coverage. So is it still worth it to host the Olympics? We get into it today on Learning More. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More, where each episode we bring you a new story about people, inventions, pop culture, and life. I'm your host, Russ, and this week we are discussing the Olympics and the modern Olympic ruins. For decades, cities have competed to become the Olympic host city. The Games bring changes to infrastructure, tourist dollars, and act as a commercial for the host city that can be seen worldwide for several weeks. However, in recent times, the Games are proving to be a burden for the citizens of the host city. And with such high costs, it's tough for the city to recoup expenditures. We've been doing this host city hopping for a long time now. Is it time for a change? So today on Learning More, I'm joined by Mark Wilson, professor of urban planning and regional planning at the School of Planning, Design, and Construction at Michigan State University. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, Russ, for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on to talk about this. This is something that has been an interest of mine for quite some time. You know, seeing all these photos of modern Olympic ruins, I guess that's the best way to say it. It sort of looks apocalyptic in some of these places. So let's talk about that. And first of all, let me ask you this. What's your interest in the Games?
Well, it started 30 years ago, actually, when I was able to participate in a World's Fair, an Expo 93 in Korea. And I was one of the professors who accompanied the student hosts for the U.S. Pavilion. And as I got to work in a World's Fair, which is a mega event, along with the World Cup, the Super Bowl, the Olympics, these gigantic global events, working there, I realized that there was so much more happening, that on the surface, it tends to look really good and glitzy and working very smoothly. But underneath, there's so many undercurrents about politics and economics and culture that I got this incredible appreciation and interest in how these big events are conducted, how they're organized and planned, and then what happens to them afterwards. Because as you pointed out, so often we are left with a wasteland or wasted opportunities when these events are over.
Right. Well, you mentioned the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Okay. This, you know, Super Bowl, that kind of makes sense because you're having it in a football stadium that it's at least going to be used several times that year, you know, several times a month probably. But when you have a swimming pool, you know, or a tennis court in a country where, you know, they just don't regularly swim or they don't regularly play tennis or whatever it is, you've got that just sitting there. And there's really probably nothing they can do with that except for demolish it.
Yeah, and that's often a challenge. So when a city wants to host an Olympics, it has to produce a very comprehensive outline of what it plans to do. And this is called the bid book. And the Olympics is looking for world-class everything. Every venue is world-class. Every venue is state-of-the-art. And the problem is, as you point out, that a lot of places don't need this. Athens has a superb baseball stadium and no one in Greece plays baseball. So these things get built for the Olympics and then they're wasted. And part of the problem is that the event is often used to spend a lot of money making the city look great. But often the mistake that host cities make is they see the Olympics as an end in itself, that we're doing this to host the Olympics. That's all that matters. That's the goal. And as planners, we think that's completely wrong. The goal is a better city, and you are using the Olympics as a way to get there, because the Olympics gets lots of stakeholders who may not normally collaborate willing to work together because the prize is so great. It gets the public interested in the future of the city. It may unleash money that normally isn't available. And so for that reason, we say that the Games are simply a means to an end. And if you can use the excuse of the Olympics to spruce up your city and fix the public transit and update the airport, then go for it. But the goal there is always what is left afterwards. And the trouble is that a lot of cities stop thinking, oh, we've done the games, we're over, we have nothing more to worry about, when in fact that's when the work really starts.
So it's kind of like you're having a party in your backyard one weekend and you say, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, buy a gazebo, buy an outdoor refrigerator, buy all these different things, and then just kind of not ever have a party in your backyard again.
Exactly. So the goal is, in that case, the metaphor works well, is that you rent a tent and you make a temporary structure and you have it and you use it, and then you take it down and you've made good use of resources. And some cities are very good at this, that they plan for their facilities to have a second life, or they plan for it to be temporary. Mm-hmm. And all of this means that the legacy, and we use the word legacy in planning a lot, what is left afterwards, the legacy of the Olympics is something that is useful, that people can look back on and say, I'm glad we spent that money. We built a new subway line. We fixed the airport. We built a park. All of those things are very positive, but that's because they were designed for long-term use.
Okay, so when you think about, you mentioned the bid book, mm-hmm. and you mentioned that they want these kind of high-tech stadiums. Yep. So in going back to that analogy, like if we just rent a tent and mm-hmm. put it in the backyard, is that going to be good enough for the IOC? Mm-hmm. Which I guess the bigger question here is, the problem with the city, or is the problem with the International Olympic Committee?
I think that's an important point. And the IOC has changed. But one of the distinctions I make is that the IOC is an event owner. And they have the mindset of an owner of something, and they want the Olympics to be their brand. They want it to be successful. They will protect it. They will do all they can to keep their product alive and looking good. The host city wants to improve the city, get prestige, to promote tourism, to perhaps renovate their infrastructure. Sometimes those two interests overlap very closely, and mm-hmm. they work for both the IOC and for the host. But sometimes they can become quite far apart. And this is the experience of the Tokyo Olympics, where Japan may want safety, but the IOC wants the brand to continue. And so Japan has nothing to lose if the games are canceled, and the IOC has everything to lose at the early stages of planning for Tokyo. So we have these two groups that have very different interests. And if they overlap a lot, then there will be success. To its credit, however, the IOC has released Agenda 2020. So several years ago, they realized that the public was losing interest. There was a lot of opposition to Olympic spending. And so they made a more sustainable set of guidelines for the Olympics. Okay. And the first applications of those are 2024 for Paris, 26 for Milan Cortina, and 28 for Los Angeles. So the games coming up are under a new set of guidelines that prioritizes the legacy value more. And so really the test of the Olympics as a brand will be coming in the next decade, when the cities that use the new guidelines will conduct the games, and we'll see if they were able to avoid some of the problems. And I think they will.
So tell us a little about those guidelines.
The guidelines focus more on sustainability, on the reuse of materials, on sustainable processes in terms of construction, long-term use of resources, and less necessarily requiring brand new facilities, when you may have perfectly good facilities that can be spruced up and do the same job.
Yeah, it seems like in looking at Los Angeles, it seems like they're doing a lot of that, where they're kind of reusing certain places that even were used in the Olympics that they hosted in the past, back in the 80s.
Yeah, and I think Los Angeles will be an interesting case, because Los Angeles saved the games in 84. And I think it could save the games again in 28. So in 1984, we came off a decade of disastrous Olympic experiences. We had Munich 72 with the terrorist attacks. Right. We had Montreal 76 with a massive cost blowout that took 40 years to pay off. And then we had Moscow with the boycott of the 1980 right. Olympics. So yeah. by the time Los Angeles comes around, the Olympics didn't have any bidders. It was the only city that bid for the 84 Olympics. And Los Angeles went into that Olympics saying, this is going to be a Games that is much more frugal. So they used a lot of college facilities. They had donors provide resources to help cover the cost. They used the 1932 Olympic Stadium that was spruced up, and they're going to use it again for 2028. Right. So yeah. I see Los Angeles as the city that's likely to save the Olympics twice in the history nice. Of the event.
Nice. Yeah. Well, and okay, so let's be clear about this too. Like, why would a city want to host the Games? Like, what is in it for, in this case, Los Angeles?
Yeah. A lot of cities use it as a rite of passage. And so cities would see themselves entering the global stage. So we've seen this with Tokyo Olympics, the Osaka World's Fair Expo 70. We saw it in Korea with the 88 Olympics, the 18 Olympics, Beijing hosting the Olympics, Shanghai hosting Expo 2010, that essentially it is a reason for you to go on the world stage and say, we are here. We are part of the advanced cities of the world. We have the resources. We have the facilities. We want to show ourselves off. So for many years, it was a sign of arrival.
Got it.
And then smaller cities started taking on the Games because they felt that the big cities didn't want to do it again because they'd done it once. They've already arrived. But then what we saw over the last 20 years is that the big cities have come back, that it's London and Tokyo and Paris and New York that are aiming for the Games. So the big cities have come back looking for them. And I think one of the reasons for this is to maintain presence, to constantly be seen in the public's eye. And a great way of doing that is hosting an event that will capture the world's attention. So we're back to seeing big cities undertaking these mega events. But I think that in part they're doing it with a much more cautious approach in terms of using it for their status and their brand value, and as a way also of upgrading their infrastructure.
I'm guessing, you know, there's years and years of benefit after this. And, you know, to your point earlier, is they're playing this for the end game right now of just the Games. Mm-hmm. But really the benefits from this can, I guess, come for decades, right? Because, you know, enhanced tourism, you're basically marketing your city for everybody in the world yep. for a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months. And then you've got, you know, potential business moves there, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully you've got infrastructure improvement. So we're recording this just a few weeks before the Tokyo Games, and people are sort of wanting to back out. So there's this like host city citizen, like anti-Olympic Games feeling that's happening. How do we recover from that? Is it just by making the Games more sustainable? Like, how do we make these Games where a host city and the citizens are actually happy with becoming a host?
I think the key is getting citizen approval, because the cities that have pulled out of recent Olympics have pulled out primarily because the public is concerned about cost. They don't want it. They don't want the disruption. And mm-hmm. so keeping the public happy is an essential element of the process. And for the Olympics, we need to make sure that the public understands what's in it for them. Because if right. you are not providing a benefit for them, then one of the essential groups in the coalition that it takes to put on an event won't be happy. And I can see that in Tokyo at the moment, the fear is about the arrival of COVID and accelerating distress and health concerns across the population. But even before then, that Tokyo was losing a little interest over the Games. And this is happening with cities when the full realization that everyone's overjoyed to get this incredible prize. But as you realize what it will take, then the public can soften in its enthusiasm and become outright antagonistic, as we've seen in Tokyo. We've also seen it in other cities as well.
Well, I think that's difficult, too, to maintain public interest for so long. I mean, the IOC process, you know, they're looking at cities 10 years in advance. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the next three hosts already that have been selected. It's like, how do you maintain public interest in that? And I would assume, you know, from the kind of urban planning side, you start to launch little improvements as you go and sort of credit the Olympics for that. I would assume that would be one way of doing it.
That's,
right?
That's the way you get people on board, because often cities may say, hey, we want to build a new public transit system, and the public balks at the cost, but you add the Olympics on top of that. We need a new transit system and the Olympics. Then right. You've got another selling point. But the way these events move forward is that you are juggling coalitions of interests. And it is federal government, state, provincial governments, local governments, it is sponsors, residents. Right. All of these groups have to be kept happy. It is a nightmare of juggling interests and expectations. And the public, I think, has come to the point where they've seen enough things go wrong. And we can date very clearly to the decline in interest in the Olympics, to the Sochi Olympics, the 2014 Winter right. Olympics, with $51 billion right. in spending that immediately soured the bids for the games that came after that. And yeah. now when cities try to promote the Olympics, they're much more likely to focus on the benefits it will bring. And also right. the reuse of facilities. So the next contender for the Summer Games is Brisbane, Australia for 2032. And in the next month or so, it's likely that they will be announced to have won the 2032 bid. And that's because the Olympics has changed its model. It now works with cities to develop plans. And Brisbane is planning to use a lot of existing facilities from past sporting events. And it's a way to sell to the public, too, because they're also offering to renovate the public transit system.
Nice.
So it's a matter of putting all the right prizes in line to get buy-in from all those groups that it takes. But there is a long history of things that have gone wrong, and it's hard to erase that.
Yeah, for certain. And, you know, I think sustainability and reuse and all of that, not only does it get the buy-in of the citizens, it makes the IOC happy, it makes the host city happy, but it also, I guess, increases the chances of actually getting a return on investment for all of this.
Well, often cities that host mega events get hooked on them. And the minute they've got one, they start looking for others. And if you've got the infrastructure and facilities, then fine.
Right.
You can just reuse them and you're getting that return on investment. So it can make sense. And so we have a number of cities that are event seekers. They're constantly on the lookout for things that will raise them in the public's mind, that will showcase the city. And having made the investment for one of these, so it could be World Cup soccer, it could be the Olympics, it could be a World's Fair, an expo, whatever you've got, as you host these events, you also build up the capacity to bid for them, because they're right. not easy to bid for. It takes years to create a bid, to get the expertise together across all the aspects of an event, and then be able to promote yourself for it. And so having got into shape to compete globally to host something, you may not want to lose that. And so to stay in condition, you just keep going over and over and over again back into the event space of the world, trying right. to attract things that will add to your city's prestige and vitality.
Well, and that's the benefit of it, if you can, right? Yeah. I mean, and like, I think Athens had some issues with mm-hmm. that, where, you know, they really had some problems after this, you know, spinning the country into bankruptcy, practically. I mean, that was tough.
Yeah, so, the part that everyone misses about Athens, because there are devastating images of decaying venues. But mm-hmm. Athens got to finally build a metro system and public transit system was incredibly useful for the city. Now, it came at a very high price, and they could have built the transit system without the Olympics if the will was there. But they did get one great thing out of it. But they also ended up with this image of the city that hosted the ghost town that right. remains. And right. There was a incredible series of images of weeds on the baseball field and fountains that have not run for a decade and all of these problems. And it only tarnished the image of the city as a result.
And you know, I think Rio was sort of the same thing. I mean, all of the news stories leading up to the Olympics was how Rio wasn't ready. You know, you had garbage floating where people were going to be surfing or swimming or whatever. And it's that was almost a I think, a negative marketing campaign for the city.
And it also locally was held out as a promise. And Brazil was very happy, especially to have the World Cup soccer and also to have the Olympics. But it very quickly became clear that because of corruption and the use of the event to marginalize populations. And often people don't think of these mega events as weapons, but they can often be used as weapons at the local level to get control of land, to avoid due process, to avoid public inquiry. I call it the Games imperative. When you have a mega event, there is an imperative. The Games are coming. We do not have time for due process. We do not have time for public meetings to explain what we're
doing.
It's
got to happen quick.
Yeah, it's got to happen quick.
We got a timeline here.
and it's an incredible weapon to hold if you are trying to get things done quickly, but you don't want too much scrutiny. And this is what happened in Rio, is that land that was taken over by slums that is prime real estate now could be claimed. Houses were knocked down. They were taken. They were appropriated, all for the Olympics under the legal imperative of countries often pass laws to facilitate the hosting of mega events. And in so doing, they facilitate what often becomes land grabs.
Let's get into the sustainability and some solutions. We'll do that. We'll take a short break here and we'll talk more about the Olympics right after this. If you enjoy history, maybe you're just feeling a little nostalgic, or you wonder who's having a birthday today, or maybe you need a reason to celebrate. Well, we've got the perfect podcast for you. It is called This Is Today. And each and every day, we talk about the historic events, celebrity birthdays. We also talk about whatever is going on today. There's always something to celebrate when you listen to This Is Today. And at just 10 minutes each day, you can make it a daily habit. You can even add it to your Alexa Flash briefing. Click the link in the description or just search in your favorite podcast app for This Is Today. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More. I'm talking with Mark Wilson. He's a professor of urban and regional planning at the School of Planning, Design, and Construction at Michigan State University. And we're talking about the Olympics and the modern Olympic ruins. We've all seen pictures and video online of empty stadiums, pools filled with stagnant water and mosquitoes, graffiti-ridden venues, and shuttered high-rises, debris that's been sitting around since the close of the games. As we need to become more environmentally conscious and focus on sustainability, are the games that are meant to help society kind of, you know, bond and unite, are they actually just hurting us?
I think that it all depends on the intentions of the host. So we can point to cities that did extraordinarily good things for the environment and sustainability. And we've also seen cities that have devastated the environment. Sochi, for the 2014 Olympics, built a railway line up into a biosphere reserve, UNESCO biosphere reserve that was of global significance, and essentially obliterated a section of it to build this railway. Ironically, the railway they built cost more than the 2010 Vancouver Olympics in their entirety. So some cities have gone into this without a care for the environment at all. Other cities, though, have been very sensitive and aware. And one of the things cities can do is pioneer new standards about expectations of how you build things. So London required a lot of renewable energy. It required that building materials be moved by water through the old canal system. So you didn't have a lot of trucks using roads. You had much more effective water transport. So cities can implement very positive measures for the permanent environment, but they can also do things like build temporary structures. So London had the basketball arena as a temporary structure, and they could dismantle it when it was over. The athletes' village was turned into apartments in a city that has a lack of housing. So it was a positive in that regard. They built a greenway, a park system, on previously industrial land. The stadium was downsized to be a more manageable size, and it was built that way, so it could be adjusted afterwards. So cities can do very useful things when it comes to the Olympics. And if sustainability is taken seriously, it's an incredible advertisement for new sustainable practices, both for the city itself. Here, this is what we can do. We can show you how we can live better, but also for the rest of the world. So you can use your city's Olympic actions as a demonstration of how to live better. And if cities do that, then it's certainly going to be a plus.
What if instead of the Olympics going to a place that's already great, you know, Paris or London or, you know, name the city. What if they went into cities that really needed help? What if the IOC worked with cities like that to actually improve those cities so that they could host there and drastically change and improve certain areas?
I think the IOC's endorsement would be a significant contributor, though ironically, Detroit has bid for the Olympics more than any other city in the world and never got it. It has bid 7 times. And the closest it got was runner-up to Mexico City in 1968. Certainly, one of the things the IOC can do is to be more open to engaging local communities. So the IOC was very strict until recently that only one place could hold the games, and you couldn't split it up across different places. So there was a bid suggested for Detroit and Windsor to co-host an Olympics. That was not allowed at the time. Now those types of sharings are good. But I think the trouble is for distressed communities that the resources necessary would be so significant that it's unlikely that the host country or the host state would come forward. And you do need some local appeal as well. And my fear would be in a case of using a distressed city is it would be used as a weapon to clear out the city and rebuild something new, which we saw in urban renewal in the 40s and 50s in the US, when the promise of improving cities, in fact, became a land grab for commercial redevelopment. So I think the lesson here is that having an eye towards helping distressed communities as part of the IOC bidding process could be very useful.
So, you would see issues with gentrification, okay. So maybe that's not the idea. Maybe what you mentioned though, about multiple cities, you know, we've got, okay. So they don't have use for a baseball stadium in Athens, but hey, San Francisco's got a great ball stadium. There's plenty of great ball stadiums throughout the United States. Why do they have to have the games in a central spot?
And that's been tradition. I think that is losing significance for the IOC at the moment. And I think there are plenty of places that can point to within 100 miles there being a lot of resources available. One of the reasons the US got the World Cup Soccer Championship for 26 was that essentially every major US city has a world standard stadium. Mm-hmm. For many parts of the world, you have to build brand new stadiums. Brazil had to build brand new stadiums at a huge cost. But for the US, with its university sports tradition, it's hard to get a U.S. city that does not have world-standard pools and gyms and stadiums and facilities and dorms to house people in. And if you split it up among a number of cities, which is what the World Cup did for the U.S., I think the 17 cities where they're hosting events for the soccer, the Olympics has the problem of a diversity of sports. But I could see that you could share the assets of different cities to enable the games to take place. One of the logistics issues, of course, is moving officials and people around a city and between spaces. But we've seen for the 2022 Beijing Winter Games, half is in Beijing, half is 100 miles away in the mountains. Same for Milan. Half is going to be in Milan, and then you're going to have to go up into the mountains to Cortina for the downhill event. So it is something of increasing interest as a way of using existing resources. And the more you can use existing resources, the more sustainable the big would be.
Why do we travel with the Olympics? Is that an idea that should be removed? Should it just go to, we have a central, you know, whatever, Olympics Island that we go to, or Olympics Mountain that we go through to the winter?
And that is that has some merit on the use of resources side. In that, yes, just build these permanent facilities to hold events. Besides, most of us just watch on TV.
Right.
As far as we're concerned, it is a running track somewhere in the world, and we're watching athletes run around
exactly.
that track, breaking records. That's all we need. This was, and this is probably one of the reasons why the idea didn't succeed, is Hitler planned on a permanent home of the Olympics in Nuremberg. That after their likely success in World War II, Germany would have been a permanent host to the Olympics, and that would always have been held in Nuremberg as a result. I think the trouble that occurs then is who's paying for the constant upkeep of those assets, and also that the interest that you can get worldwide in an event because it is open to so many potential hosts might lose a little. And also some cities would lose the chance to do it right, to have an excuse.
Right.
But it does raise the question, why do we need this taking place all over the world when most people are only going to see it on a device or on TV, and it could be anywhere.
Los Angeles, there you go. That's everything's produced there anyway. All the TV and movies that we watch. So
I'm sure the city that wins the permanent home would love it.
But
then
exactly.
lots of other cities wouldn't be so interested.
So there's several possible solutions, ideas, and, you know, those were just a few of them. I'm sure there's plenty of ideas out there with the minds of the world working on this. Let's talk now instead about the future of the Olympics. What about the future of the Olympic ruins? What about all of these stadiums and, you know, I mentioned the mosquito-filled pools or whatever. Like, what do we do with those? How do we get out of that situation that's already happened?
In a lot of cases, urban planning is, of course, highly supportive of these changes. And we call it adaptive reuse, where you take a structure and turn it into something else.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, there's an immediate reuse and an arena gets used for something else, or it becomes the home of a local sports team and there's an immediate transition. Sometimes it might take 10 years. The swimming pool for the Beijing Olympics has been through several different purposes. An indoor water theme park, for example. So you can turn them into things. The trouble is if the location is good. And one of the mistakes that Olympic cities sometimes make is they put the Olympic venue away from where people want to be. So Athens the Olympic complex in the northern suburbs of Athens. And normally people wouldn't want to be there.
Gotcha.
And that becomes a problem in that, well, we have this space, we could turn it into something, but we have people don't want to come all this way out into the suburbs when you have a thriving central city. So if it's in a good location, it will eventually find a use. Now, it may need some subsidy, it may need some local government support to happen, but it's likely to occur eventually. But if the location is not particularly useful for anyone, then it's going to be really hard to turn it into something else.
Right, right. Okay, so now I'm gonna ask you the big question here. If you were in charge of all of this, what's the one or two things you would change right away?
I like the focus on the legacy, on what's left behind. That the Olympics has as its objective the hosting of a stellar sporting event, you know, the ultimate world sporting event. And that's its goal. And even though there is some language about improving the host city, the focus is solely on the event itself. And as one event ends, then all eyes turn to the next one. So the minute Tokyo is over, the Olympics is looking at Beijing in February 22. So they're always looking to the next big Olympic event. I think ways of demanding a focus on legacy, and the IOC admits this themselves, that they are increasingly looking at what is left behind because it is hurting their brand image. And that is something that is very important to them. And so almost the full weight of public opinion having a skeptical view of the Olympics is hurting the event. And right. so making the event something that does not lead to years of stagnant water pictures and news reports on right. wasted resources is in their best interests.
For me, I look forward to the Olympics every time it comes on. Yep. It's just, it's fun TV. It's fun to watch. I would love to go to the Olympics someday or have it hosted in a city that I, you know, live in. I think that would be fantastic. So I guess I'm saying my opinion of it's still good.
No, and I am very critical of these events, but I do enjoy them. And I think what I particularly find appealing is there's an energy in a city hosting a major right. event. And you get it everywhere. It's not simply only those people in the stadium, but there is a certain energy and excitement. And also, it brings in a lot of talent and expertise into a city that normally wouldn't come there or consider it or experience that city. And so it does provide a surge of vitality. And as a planner, one of the hallmarks to me of a successful city is a city with vitality, where you can go out and there are people out and about, there are things to do, there are experiences that the city provides. The Olympics helps build that vitality. And so I love experiencing it, but not at the cost of wasting billions that could be spent right. on something else.
Right. There is that little asterisk that we'll put at the end of that. Mark, thank you so much for talking to us about this and educating us on hosting the Olympics and all of the modern Olympic ruins out there. Thank you, Mark.
It's been a pleasure, Russ.
And thank you for listening to Learning More. Thank you for subscribing as well and sharing Learning More amongst your friends. Yeah, I saw some people do some tweets about it the other day. So that is awesome. I really do appreciate it. I also would love it if you would check out our daily podcast called This Is Today. There's a link for that in the description of this podcast. Hey, and guess what? Next week, we're bringing Mark back again because I want to talk to him about the future of cities. Cities are changing, and the pandemic and all of the changes with working from home and even like the self-driving cars. Like, will we even have our own cars? Do we need a garage at our house? Do roads need to look like they do now? There's plenty of stuff to talk about on this, and we'll do that next time on Learning More.